You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsoccer.com. Brought to you by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Icarus FC. My good friend Daniel Sperry, how are you doing tonight, my friend? And more importantly, what's worth more money right now, Patrick Mahomes or the collective economy of Missouri and Kansas combined, sans Patrick Mahomes?
I'm going to go with Patrick Mahomes. Actually, I'll go with the collective community. There's an interesting wealth thing that was put out. Go on Twitter. Sorry if my voice sounds really funky right now, but our mic is doing something weird and I can't figure it out. But if you go on Twitter, search up my good friend Tom Martin. It should be Let It Fly at Let It Fly Tom. He put out a great graphic. He adopted a great graphic. That had to do with all of the top income companies in each state, and he scribbled over the state of Missouri with the words Patrick Mahomes. That sounds about right.
All right. We've got a great show for you tonight, Dan. It has been a news dump of a Monday, to say the least, in Major League Soccer, but this is going to be our full and comprehensive and up-to-the-minute MLS is back preview. We will be addressing the news, and we do so with the full understanding, Dan, that things might change completely by the time some of you are listening, going all the way up to the first game as scheduled on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. So first of all, Dan, let's start with the news of the hour, the news of the last couple hours. That is FC Dallas, Football Club Dallas, have chosen to bow out of the tournament due to the number of COVID tests that positive that they had over the weekend last week in traveling to Orlando, and tests that were positive, players who were positive when they arrived in Orlando, that they were negative when they left Dallas. And we're seeing very similar numbers in the form of Nashville SC. And so Nashville soccer COVID could very well be headed in a similar direction to Dallas.
Yeah, they could. We'll see what happens with with Nashville. The concerning thing here is the fact that so these are folks who, the cases that are happening with Dallas, the cases that are happening with Nashville, these are teams that, you know, upon arrival to the bubble, had a ton of positive cases. Nashville knowingly got on a plane with a bunch of people who had tested positive, and now you've got 8 positives that were brought into the Orlando bubble. Dallas brought into the Orlando bubble 10 cases. They say, oh, well, we didn't test positive any time before that, so now we get to Florida and it happens. Well, here's the thing. You cannot test they've done research on it. There's a really good article. Go read Jeff Carlisle's article that he wrote today. Shows a very good number about what's going on. At least shows a little bit of the medical, the testing science behind what's going on. And you see, the Orlando Pride, there's the issue of the false positives. But you look at this situation, Dallas and Nashville contracted this virus multiple days before. They finally started testing positive upon arrival to Orlando. These are two teams that clearly did not do everything that it takes. According to Grant Wall, this kind of paints the picture pretty well for me, in my opinion. Sources with knowledge of the situation tell me other MLS teams wanted FC Dallas out of the bubble tournament after not doing what was necessary to be virus-free and ready to play. This is all per Grant Wall. Similar feelings about Nashville right now from those inside the bubble. This is another follow-up quote tweet from Grant Wall. Worth noting, the language in the official press release was Dallas, quote, was withdrawn from the MLS tournament. Not Dallas withdrew. Other clubs wanted FC Dallas out. Here's what happens. You know, Matt Beazer, I have the privilege of listening to Matt Beazer on public radio routinely because the morning radio guy for Kansas City's best sports talk radio station. It just happens to be the play-by-play announcer for Sporting Kansas City, Nate Picchetti. And Nate has Bees and Vermees and a few others on regularly. Beasler was talking about their locker room is taking this so incredibly serious. There are no jokes about coronavirus in the locker room going around. They're not messing with it. They take their precautions. They do what they do. Why? Because they know. We want to go to this tournament. We want to play soccer. This is what our job is. This is what we love to do. We want to be playing right now. And anything that we would do that would possibly keep us from doing that is an absolute travesty and a detriment to the team. And every single team at player on that team is doing their best to take it seriously. I used to live in the same area that Alan Pulido moved to once he got out of his downtown apartment. Saw him at a grocery store, saw him at a Chipotle multiple times. That guy, every single time he went out, had a mask on. Every single time. Half the store did not have a mask when we were in the grocery store. Guess who had a mask on?
Alan Pulido.
Right? Because they're sitting there and they're saying, wow, we're taking this serious. Guess who is on Instagram chilling in his fat million-dollar mansion with his wife every single night? Alan Pulido. They're not out on the town. They're not out partying. When they leave their house, it's to go to the grocery store maybe, to go exercise, walk around the neighborhood. That's it. I mean, that's what all of these players are doing. So you have two teams who clearly did not take it serious enough. Not the whole team, but certain individuals on both these teams have not taken it seriously enough. FC Dallas is a young team. Nashville, not necessarily a young team, but they're in a place that has had pretty lax protocols publicly regarding this virus throughout the entire thing. Same with Dallas and Texas. So to be honest, I'm not quite shocked that, you know, the two teams that are having serious testing outbreaks or serious positive case outbreaks are coming from the two places that they did. But I will get off my high horse. But here's my thing. This tournament is probably going to go on. And if you are a team that did not take it seriously beforehand, felt like, oh, we can go out, we might be okay. Guess what? You played yourself. I need like the DJ Khaled like soundbite. Just be like, you played yourself. Like, that's how it feels. And it's just like, you're going to miss out. The FC Dallas are going to end up being the Orlando Pride of the MLS tournament. This isn't on MLS. This isn't on the Orlando bubble. This is on FC Dallas players for being negligent and irresponsible beforehand. And that's what it is. And unfortunately, it seems like Nashville as well. 8 positive cases.
Yeah, no, it's problematic, Dan. You know, I think I'm still struggling for a good Norwich City joke. So if somebody can find a pun here with Timo Pukki, but Orlando Pride were the canary in the coal mine of if you are breaking the bubble within your own market, if you are not abiding by the guidelines set out, in their case, it would have been the NWSL and I guess local Florida guidelines, which take of that what you will. And clearly these two teams did not abide by the collective guidelines that they had from their team, from the league, and then also local authorities right now. And so I don't know if Orlando Pride was the canary in the coal mine, Dan, then I guess at this point we're in the coal mine and like Timo Pukki is showing up and throwing the canary in our faces. So I agree with you in the sense that this is not on the bubble, but we're still, it probably won't be from a time cycle standpoint that we see until the second week of this tournament, possibly into the end of the group stage and the start of the knockout round, how things are going in terms of the security of that bubble as well. And so that is somewhat problematic. So, I mean, I agree with you, Dan. I still think this tournament's going to go on. But, I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who, okay, Dan sent me something and now I have to look to see what it is.
It's funny. You're going to enjoy this.
Okay. It's from the LA Galaxy, so this can't possibly be. We're doing this live here, folks. Okay, it's loading. Okay, so Orlando City SC tweeted, "See you soon, LA Galaxy. Hashtag MLS is back." And the LA Galaxy quote tweeted and said, "Please don't touch us." That's a pretty solid burn there.
That's good.
That's a good one. Okay, so in any case, Dan, this is all of these cases to this point are some of it is random bad luck, and some of it is poor actions by the teams within their own market or in the process of getting to Orlando. I am still not very confident about the security of the non-secure bubble that MLS teams are going to be in. I do not think that these will be the last positive tests that we have. I'm not a betting man, and I know MLS is really pushing a lot of the Vegas bets right now, Dan, but if I had money and if I was feeling lucky in that regard, I would be willing to bet money that we will see cases into the second week of the second full week. So this coming, so a week from this coming Thursday or later, because of the insecurity of the bubble. But I think, again, it just speaks to, you know, to, you know, the flow chart that I go back to on how are we here? How do we deal with this? The first question is, should we have done this? And I'm still like, I can understand there are a bunch of simplicities in having a hub city. There were a bunch of reasons why, with the facilities and the access from ESPN, from a broadcasting standpoint, this was convenient. But the, you know, the answer to how do we do this in a way that puts health and safety first and then allows our players to get here safely and be okay safely and not have any issues. Clearly the protocols were not followed. That should have been a little firmer, and I'm still not convinced that this tournament in Orlando, as it is currently set up, is the answer. So I still have a lot of concerns. And I do not think these will be the last cases that we have, and I would not be surprised if before this is over, we have a team either before the start of the tournament or at some point forfeit or be severely undermanned because of COVID cases or soft muscle or soft tissue injuries like we've seen in the Premier League and the Bundesliga, effectively be in a position where they have a scheduled loss because of lack of players available. So with that, Dan, let's get to the actual tournament, pretend everything's going to be hunky-dory, and predict how things are going to turn out. So, Dan, we will start chronologically with Group A. This is the group of six that we talked about last week, folks. Now we'll have the top three teams advance to the knockout rounds, and then the fourth place team in this group will be eligible for one of the three at-large bids. So the best third bids for the other teams, it will be the best. It will be the fourth best for Group A. The Group A participants are the aforementioned Orlando City, of whom the LA Galaxy do not want them to touch. They also have Inter Miami, New York City FC, Philadelphia Union, Chicago Fire, and Nashville SC. Rachel Krieger of MLS Soccer, of MLSsoccer.com, of LastWordOnSoccer.com, posted our group preview for that. Dan, walk me through this group, and how do you see, let's start with, who are your top three teams, and if you're feeling courageous, list them in order.
Well, I don't know if Nashville's going to be playing this tournament right now. So, yeah, this is an interesting group, but I think it's relatively clear-cut, top-heavy. In my opinion, New York City FC is the best team here. Heavy Metal Football and Ronnie Delia, the New York City FC is going to be raring and ready to go. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch them. They were a blast in CONCACAF Champions League to watch. And I believe they're going to continue to be, excuse me, a blast. Man, I'm yawning like that. That's crazy. Yeah, I think they're going to be a blast regardless. So I'd like to think of Philadelphia Union next in line. I like the Union. I like what they've got. I also really like Orlando City. I said that going into the season, that I was a big fan of what Orlando City had done in the off season, and I felt like a guy like Pareja was going to do well for them as a coach. But the problem with that is that's a very long-term solution. When I was talking on Holding the High Line with Mark, I pointed out that he asked if having a long-term manager for Sporting Kansas City, like Vermees, gave them an advantage. And I felt like any manager that has been with their team for longer than, like, 2 years is at a significant advantage over that group. But for me, between 10 and 2 years isn't that much of an advantage. But teams with low roster overhaul and consistent management from a decision-making and at a manager standpoint are teams that are going to benefit for a short-term tournament like this. So for me, that throws out a club like Nashville, a club like Chicago, a club like Orlando. And unfortunately, Miami is also in that boat. So you've got a group of four. These four other teams outside of the Union in New York City are sitting there, teams that are unfamiliar to their manager, haven't played a whole lot with each other, and experienced significant roster overhaul. Chicago Fire are a very new-looking team. Orlando City, a very new-looking team. Inter Miami and Nashville SC, brand spanking new. They have two games under their belt together, period. two professional games as a team under their belt. So I don't know if any of those four teams has a significant advantage over the other. And Nashville SC might not even be in this. So I'm not even really going to consider them. Also, because even in those two games that we saw before the season, they were the worst teams in terms of expected goals created and one of the worst teams in expected goals created against. They were bad on both sides of the ball. They're probably going to be bad on both sides of the ball again in this tournament. So even if they do play, I'm not considering them very much. I'm looking at Chicago as a team that, and Orlando. Those are the two teams that are the most cohesive recently, but Inter Miami's got more talent. However, Leandro Gonzalez Perez, not going to be in there, and even though he's a new acquisition, someone we didn't get to talk about a whole lot, he's still going to be a piece for them going forward. However, not right now. Miami scored one goal in their two games as well. So for me, I think a team, it's between either Orlando or Chicago, who's going to take that third spot in the group. I'd be shocked if Miami honestly got out of this group just because of the lack of experience together. And Chicago and Orlando just have more experience than Miami and Nashville. So I'm going to say Orlando just because they host. So my top three teams in this group would probably be New York City, Orlando, and Philly.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you, Dan. I guess the concern that I have, if Nashville ends up bowing out of this tournament, how do they redo the groups, obviously? Because then if we're doing this by what the FIFA laws are, if you're forfeiting the games, that's a 3-0 win for the three teams that Nashville was supposed to play. So I would assume that they'd be rebalancing it so that you're actually having to play that game itself. My one concern that I have with Philly on that front is their opening game is Thursday, and it is against New York City FC. I think if Philly was playing any other combination of the teams in this group, not including New York City FC, I think they'd be fine. I think New York City FC gets out of the group no matter which three of the other five teams that they're playing. If Philly ends up losing that game to NYCFC, the teams that aren't playing NYCFC would have an advantage over Philly in that regard. I still think Jim Curtin and his group are going to be able to get the job done, but I'm kind of thinking that if that result doesn't go their way, they're more likely to be the third team than the second team. I'd agree with you on Orlando for two reasons. One, we've seen Oscar Pereja, especially when he is under-talented against another opponent, be very conservative, compact, tough to play against, and just really, really smash and grabby. And we've seen that be effective for him, certainly in his time at FC Dallas. The other advantage he has, because even though teams are, you know, getting a week to come into the humidity and everything, they've been training in this every single day. So maybe they don't have an advantage over Inter Miami in that first game of the season. But, you know, as humid as it is during the middle of the summer, Philly, Chicago, Nashville to a lesser extent, New York City certainly are not what South and Central South Florida are right now. So I don't know that I have a lot of confidence in Orlando City to do anything once they actually play a good team. But given that they're playing Inter Miami, who, you know, are a new team, and then who else do we have on their schedule? And then they're playing New York City FC, so that'll be a tough game. But then they're playing Nashville, and if it's not Nashville, anybody other than Philly who they'd have to play for, they take care of business. So I think New York City FC wins the group. If Philly's able to gut out a draw or actually upset New York City FC, they're definitely a lock for that second position for me. But if Orlando's able to get a result, then, you know, I would say it would be New York City, Orlando, Philly. Let's go to just generally, Dan, who is your most likely fourth team out of this group? Okay, we know it's not Nashville. We've got the same top three, so basically we're choosing between Miami and Chicago. Who do you have less doubt in, Dan?
I have less doubt in Chicago just because Miami is still kind of in that expansion phase. They just haven't had as much experience to work together. And I know Chicago Fire are pretty different than what they were last year. And I made that point. However, their manager is a good manager. He's smart. He's got his head on his shoulders. And he's someone they're familiar with. And I just like some of the moves that they had. The Chicago Fire team last year, under Paunovic, actually had the third best expected goal differential through American Soccer Analysis. They had the third best expected goal differential in the entire league. But they didn't make the playoffs because they couldn't finish their chances. They didn't have a whole lot of goal-scoring talent up front. and Alexander Katai. If you're following any of the Alexander Katai saga, CJ Sapong, I think, pointed out that Katai was racist and wouldn't give him the ball, and he thought it because he was black. And that there was how many times that Sapong was wide open with a chance to score, and Katai would literally just try and shoot it from some weird angle. I can't remember that interview that I saw. I read it somewhere. Worth a read if I can find it. If I can find it, we'll make sure to link it in the description. But yeah, the CJ Sapong story about Alex playing with Alexander Katai was interesting. So Alexander Katai could be the reason why Chicago Fire never made good on their third best in the league expected goal differential. So they're my fourth.
I'm taking Inter Miami because they have more Rodolfo Pizarros than the Chicago Fire. I think the other thing that's going to be critical, especially for these bubble teams, is having a distinct game changer. I think Orlando has that in Nani. I think Philly doesn't have any distinct weaknesses. Obviously, NYCFC have their plethora of strikers and Maxi Morales. Taking away those three teams, the next best player is Pizarro, and Pizarro plays for Inter Miami. With that, Dan, let's move on to Group B, and that features the Seattle Sounders, the Vancouver Whitecaps, and just the San Jose Earthquakes. I can take it we're both betting that FC Dallas will not be finishing in the top three in this group. So I guess, Dan, just give me the – okay, I think we're both in agreement that it's probably going to be Seattle winning the group at this point. So let's so unless you disagree, let's just move on to who wins the game between Vancouver and San Jose to get the number two spot.
San Jose. Vancouver were awful, what I saw from them. San Jose at least like looked like they could create chances, and the Vancouver attack, which will be missing, Freddie Montero, looked like they couldn't score a goal on like a U-20 side, maybe. So I like the San Jose Earthquakes. Just I think they're the type of team and the type of coach that Almeida is and creates just makes it perfect for this kind of tournament. So Earthquakes are like the curveball that everyone's not going to be expecting in Orlando, of like high press, heavy metal, you know, like man marking for 90 minutes when it's 90 degrees and 90% humidity. So yeah, I'm going to say Earthquakes.
I'll take the Quakes as well as this one. I think just given the fact of how much time teams have had off, and, you know, I don't know that what happened in the first two games we can really ride on, Dan, but as we've kind of been talking about, and we'll certainly get to this when we get to my thoughts on Group D, is I think there's value in teams that are just choosing to simplify, of like having a very distinct style, one that is uniform, one that they've been able to drill out the last couple weeks. And the fact is, we know Matias Almeida, everywhere he's been, likes to do man marking. I don't know if that's going to be effective against the Seattle Sounders, but Dan, tell me what exactly was the plan or the style of play for the Vancouver Whitecaps other than don't concede three goals last year and get the ball to your key attacking players like Yordi Reyna, who will not be there. What was the plan for Vancouver in 2019, tactically?
Bunker, counter. Okay, get the ball, yeah. Get the ball to Ali Adnan. That was like they said, give it to our like $1 million left back because that was the best chance creator that they had.
Yeah. So I'm going to take the San Jose Earthquakes having roughly a similar roster, having a very coherent style of play that they've been working on for, you know, well over a year now, over let's just get it to our right back and expect him to be our offense. So I don't have any faith in the Quakes to do anything once they actually get to the knockout round, but can they smash and grab and gut out the ugliest 1-0 win against a Yordi Reyna-less Vancouver Whitecaps and lose to the Seattle Sounders by less than the Vancouver Whitecaps will in the event goal differential becomes a thing? Absolutely.
You had made the point about Inter Miami that Rodolfo Pizarro is like the game changer, right? The San Jose Earthquakes with Christian Espinoza and Vaco, two game changers that Vancouver Whitecaps can't touch with any other position on their roster. That's it.
Yes, I could see. I don't think that it's likely. I wouldn't count on it happening, you know, the majority of the time in a 34-game season. Could I see Vaco randomly coming out of this game with a goal and two assists and the San Jose Earthquakes winning the game 3-0? I absolutely could see that happening. I guess the other thing that we really need to talk about here, Dan, is the fact that this is now a group of three And so whether or not, given that we have a group of six, whether or not there's a realignment, is MLS just going to treat it as all three of these teams just count their scheduled game against FC Dallas as a 3-0 game? Or could we possibly see some form of realignment, or maybe they try to fit in a fourth game? We don't really have that. It's a little bit late to reschedule it. The teams in, you know, a team in Group A would be the most likely one. I think the easiest one from a structure standpoint would be to move Nashville, a Western Conference team, and an Eastern Conference group there, but we're not sure what's going to happen to them. I think from a formatting standpoint, the simplest answer, albeit one that's painful, is Nashville, Dallas is out, and then they just randomly draw one of the five teams in Group A to move over to Group B. Dan, your thoughts? Or, I mean, this tournament's already wonky, is it enough? Should we leave it less unwonked?
Move Chicago Fire to that group and just kick Nashville out. And then you got three groups of four. Very simple. Top two teams advance. Merry Christmas.
Okay. That's a thought. I think it would have to be, if a team does move over, in theory, the best would have been Nashville. But I think if it's not, then I think you probably just random draw. Maybe don't pick the two Florida teams because they were already scheduled to play on Wednesday anyways. And the easy thing about it moving to Group B, is that the schedules were roughly one day late. So this isn't like a team in Group A is getting moved to Group F and they don't play until Monday. And, you know, that really throwing off their schedule or giving them a distinct advantage over, you know, some of the Group F teams, of which are traveling tomorrow. Shall we move on to Group C, Dan?
Yeah, sorry, I was trying to do the math. If you did that, so if you set it up where you have six groups of four, you go top two advance and then the four best third place finishers.
Yeah, the four best. So four of the six third best finishers as well. And at least that would, albeit via very complicated circumstances to get there, that would resolve the wonkiness that you have situated in Group A. Let's move on, Dan, to Group C. This is an Eastern Conference group. It features Toronto FC, the New England Revolution, Montreal Impact, and DC United. I'll go first in this one. I think the obvious class of the group here is Toronto FC. They've got the most talent, I would say, other than, you know, the two attacking players, Carlos Gil and Gustavo Bo. I would say the three best and most impactful players, maybe the top four, are on Toronto FC. So I think definitely, unless Toronto FC loses to New England Revolution, because I could totally see Bruce Ball trying to get a result there and then really doing well against the compact Montreal Impact and DC United. But so I think Toronto FC wins this group. And then it's a battle between three teams that are all going to play bunker and counter. Nobody's going to want the ball with numbers forward in their own attacking half. I would lend to think that there it ultimately comes down to who has the most in-form and the best strikers. I think the two best players that you have outside of Toronto FC are the aforementioned Heal and Bo. So I would have them there. And I don't know that it's going to have to take like Montreal or DC, I think, gutting out and very ugly getting three draws to have a remote chance at being the best third. So I think it's Toronto. I think it's New England number two. And I don't think the rest of it matters, Dan, because I don't see either Montreal or DC, whoever finishes third, being one of the at-large bids. Dan, your thoughts?
I agree with you on Toronto. But I like Montreal. I think they've got I know Yonri is a new manager. This is a team that went out and played pretty well in CCL, if I'm correct. Wait, did they lose? I can't remember. They might have gotten knocked out in CCL, right?
Dan, that was 5 years ago. I don't remember. Keep talking. I'll look it up.
I actually like the Montreal team. I think they had some good chances. They had some good tactical ideas in a very short period of time under Henry that were positive. They may not have gotten the job done on the defensive end. I think they did end up losing to Saprissa. But Safir Taider, Victor Wanyama, you got Wanyama as a brute force enforcer in the midfielder, who is a high-engine box-to-box guy anyways. You got Safir Taider, who's great on the ball. You have Bojan Krkić. You've got, but I like what Montreal have put together as a team, and so I'm going to go with the Impact as being the second team out of this group. But I do agree with you that only two teams will come out of this group, because I think DC and New England, I like what New England does, but against a team like Montreal, like I said, they're not going to have the majority of the ball against Toronto. Like you said, you've got three teams who are kind of counter-attacky in what they do. So even if New England Revolution dominate the ball against DC United and Montreal Impact, I see Montreal playing compact and trying to spring them on the counter. Same with DC United. So there's not a whole lot of goals and not a whole lot of chance creation. Does Carlos Gil and Gustavo Bo, does all of that together, does that work? Do they get the job done? I don't know if they can do that in a short time period. And they didn't look good in the first couple of games this season. You know, Bruce Arena was a mid-season spark. We've seen teams who have had a mid-season spark with their manager and a new player, and then the next year didn't look great with that manager and the new player because, you know, in turn, it was just a mid-season jolt to the loins instead of a good, long-lasting change. Will Bruce get it right with New England? I don't know if this tournament's the greatest place to judge it. I think he can in the long run, but that's not what this tournament's for. And I think Montreal and Toronto are the two teams that are going to get out of this group.
Okay. I guess just a quick fact check here, Dan. The Montreal Impact did advance out of the round of 16. They beat Saprissa 2-2 on aggregate. It was 2-2 at Saprissa and then 0-0 against in Montreal. So they advanced on away goals, and they lost the first leg to Olympia 2-1. So that's if CCL right. resumes, they've got a second leg where they're going to need at least a goal and then some in order to advance.
And that
to...
was the one where Safir Tadayer scored the freaking insane volley from like 40 yards. Out, right?
That sounds about right. Okay, let's move on to Group D. I guess the first thing we have to start off, Dan, pretty much everybody's
Dan,
either
Matt
picking
Derby.
Dan Matt Derby. Yes, Dan Matt Derby. But in any case, I think the first thing we have to start off, we'll address it now here, Mark. A lot of people were pegging the group F
Mark.
As the group of Dan. Excuse me, I apologize. A lot of people were pegging Group F as the group of death. I think Group D... There is the standard deviation between how far all of the four teams are apart is smallest in Group D. For my understanding, for how I think of a group of death in terms of being a favorite, a really strong dark horse, and then a really good third team that in a World Cup setting would be sent home early, that's what I think of with a group of death. Dan, is Group D your group of death? And if not, what sets it apart from Group F?
Group D is for death. You know what sets it apart from Group F is, by and large, every single team will be bringing their best players that they can. Minnesota United will be missing Icapara. Felipe Gutierrez will be out for Sporting Kansas City. Other than that, every single team is going to be jam-packed with talent. Minnesota United do have a decent center-back replacement for Opara. We'll see what happens with them. But... Minnesota United's attack, the way Minnesota United plays, Icapara necessary, yes. I feel like Ike's difference is going to be felt more so in the knockout stages of this tournament because I think
Ike's
Minnesota
not
United
at
will
the
be
tournament,
there.
Dan.
Ike's well, the lack of Ike's presence.
The lack of Ike's presence. Aha,
there we go.
I understand.
That's what I meant.
Continue.
The lack of Ike's presence will be missed, will be felt. I guess that makes sense. The lack of Ike's presence will be felt in the knockout stages of this tournament for Minnesota United, because I believe they're getting there. I look at this group, I see three teams coming out of it, actually. I see Colorado, Minnesota, and Sporting Kansas City. All three can score goals. Real Salt Lake is the Real Salt Lake's defense, fine. There's no Nick Raimondo back there anymore, but I think they have a decent goalkeeper solution. Their back line is solid. I do like their back line. However, you really know Jefferson Severino anymore. So he's been gone. FYI, that happened a long time ago for all y'all who haven't been keeping up on MLS. But Savarino's gone. He was one of the only consistent pieces to the attack that RSL had for a while. Rusnak is Rusnak. He's hot and cold. He's either lighting it up or he's not getting the ball to his feet and he's moping around. They're big. Sam Johnson, okay striker. Corey Baird has been Corey Baird. He is going to be who he is. It might be like, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10 goals and somewhere between 5 and 10 assists. But he's not a prolific, insane person that can be a game changer. And then their other attacking piece that they have is Giuseppe Rossi. That's what they've been touting as their big off-season acquisition. Well, we lost Nick Raimondo, who's arguably one of the greatest goalkeepers in Major League Soccer history. But we got Giuseppe Rossi. Giuseppe Rossi is what you're touting if you're RSL. That's a big question mark for me. Colorado Rapids got better, not only in the managerial department, but I think in the player department. Sporting Kansas City is what it is in the managerial department. got better in the player department, in my opinion. And Minnesota United FC with Luis Amaria is a golden goal scorer. He's a very he may be one of the top five strikers in this league, period, by the time it's all said and done with his time in Minnesota. I like Amaria a lot. Those are three teams that can score goals. They come at you in a couple of different looks, and it's something that you've got to be ready to deal with. RSL is literally going to throw Sam Johnson and Giuseppe Rossi at you. I don't think that's going to get it done in this tournament. And so, for me, they're the odd man out. But I do see Colorado, Minnesota, and Sporting Kansas City being able to get through by the virtue of either they're all going to tie each other 0-0 or like 2-2, and then they're going to score enough goals but get enough points to get through. It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree with you, Dan, that RSL is probably the weakest team in that group. I question, especially with just how condensed the schedule is, like, how much time-wise, in terms of minutes played, are we going to get from Kyle Beckerman? And then how much in terms of quality are we going to get from Kyle Beckerman? I think, you know, he's kind of that last fading, you know, from the 2009 RSL team, from the one that made Open Cup final and then ultimately made at the MLS Cup final in 2013, that was still core. He's kind of the last part of that group. And I think, you know, when he leaves, I think he had a quote this week in an article that I read, I believe, from MLSsoccer.com. I apologize if I'm getting that wrong, where he said he's playing till the wheels fall off. I think there's a really good possibility if he has to play 270 minutes in 9 days or whatever it is, that the wheels are going to fall off. And even if they get through, he's not going to be available for the knockout stage. And I agree with you about the concerns from RSL from an offensive standpoint, just because everything is going to have to come in and around Albert Rusnak, unless Demir Krylak plays at the number nine role. But most of RSL's offense if you either disrupt the ball getting to Rusnak, or if you don't let him do anything once he gets the ball, there's nobody else who I really fear in that regard. Whereas I would say Luis Amarillo is certainly dangerous, as are all of the other strikers with Minnesota United. We know what Adrian Heath is able to do in terms of offensive creation. I mean, the Colorado Rapids last year scored goals for fun when Kai Kamara was hot, and it was basically just Vardy party with Kai Kamara. There's nobody else on RSL that I can look to and I can say, if our entire offense is get the ball in the final third and pass it to that player, we're going to be okay, other than Rusnak, who's just further away from goal. So if things get bad for RSL, I think we'll see Demir Krylak up top early and often. But I agree with you. I think this is a tournament that's absolutely built for Sporting Kansas City, especially with the way that their season ended last year and just them being hashtag Sporting Fit. I think they'll be the class of this group and win it. And then I think it comes down to that final game of the actual group, I believe on the last or the second to last day of actual group play between Minnesota United and Colorado Rapids. I think Colorado will be able to get a positive result in that one. So I have Colorado finishing second. It might have to be on goal differential or some other tiebreaker. And I think Minnesota United will finish third. If Aiko Parra was in this tournament and able to play regularly, I think they would stymie the other teams enough defensively to where they would be the second spot. So that's where my tiebreaker is on this one. Other than a few players who mostly fill depth roles and are in positions where the Rapids have strength, they're not anticipated to miss anybody of key significance. Kai Kamara is going to be there. Jack Price is going to be there. They're good from a center back standpoint. They've got two goalkeepers, because I don't know if you remember, Dan, William Yarbrough signed for the Rapids right before everything got shut down. So, I mean, like, this is made for, we're going to go in, we're going to defend, we're going to put numbers behind the ball, we are going to counterattack, get fouls, and get set pieces. That will be good enough for the Rapids to be a tough out in the knockout round, and I think it'll be good enough for them to get second place in Group D. Let's move on to Group E, Dan. I'll throw it to you first. Atlanta United, FC Cincinnati, New York Red Bulls, and Columbus Crew. Other than the Rapids, I know the Crew have been one of the other dark horse hipstery picks for this. What do you see in this? And I guess, you know, like, let's start with the top two, and then we'll discuss who your third place team is.
I don't have a third place team getting out of this group. I'll go Atlanta United and Columbus Crew. I think they're the two clearly best teams in this. New York Red Bulls just lost one of their best offensive threats in Josh Sims because he wanted to end his loan and return to England because of the COVID crisis and everything. FC Cincinnati is freaking FC Cincinnati. The skepticism on them is explainable and pretty well rooted in reason based on the sample sizes that we've seen from them so far. Columbus and Atlanta, two best teams. I don't know which one's going to go first. I kind of like Columbus because, you know, Atlanta made a decent signing
Jürgen Damm.
Yes, and Jürgen Damm, but he won't be playing. They don't really have a true striker outside of Adam Pillowfeet John. So you've got Adam John playing with Barco and all those guys, or maybe not Adam John. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Atlanta. I do think they're the second best team, at least the second best team in this group, though, by a pretty long shot. So not sure who's going to finish first or second. I'll take Columbus just because they're fully healthy. But those are the only two teams getting out of this group. I see New York Red Bulls with two heavy losses to Atlanta and Columbus. Just because Columbus has got a lot of quality, man. So, folks, don't expect the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls, if there's any, like, real traditional power that I look at in all of this that I think, man, they're in real danger of not getting out of their group, it's the Red Bulls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm definitely in agreement with you, Dan. I'm going to lean towards Columbus on this one because even though Columbus has had a couple positive tests, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they got there a little bit early because Caleb Porter wanted them to acclimate to the humidity and they actually wanted to play a friendly before the tournament started, and they ended up having to cancel that. But they're playing Atlanta in their second game, and they're not playing them until – or no, it's their final game, and they're not playing them until the 21st of July. Two weeks from tomorrow, actually. So that's plenty of time for them to get, not have their players unavailable. The first team that they're playing will be FC Cincinnati, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, they'll be playing Hell is Real. So that's their easiest game, and the game where they're probably going to be at their weakest, both in terms of being acclimatized to the environment and in terms of not having players available because they tested positive for COVID. So I think they'll get a result in that one. At that point, they'll be fuller strength to take on the New York Red Bulls, and they'll be in a great position to get a result against Atlanta in this one. So I've got Columbus winning this group overall for the same reasons as you, that I have concerns about Atlanta, and it's really the schedule behind when they have to play Atlanta and what their situation is of why I'm favoring them to get a result in Atlanta and thus finish second overall in the group. The Red Bulls, I have a really, you know, serious doubts about. No Bradley Wright Phillips. I know they had a couple, you know, good young players, Barlow, and I can't remember the name of the other guy last year who were playing the forward positions. But you talk about losing Luis Robles and losing both of their fullbacks this offseason. That's not good from an offensive standpoint. I think the Red Bulls will lose, maybe not heavy-handed in scoreline, but certainly in performance. The scoreline at 2-0 might be flattering to them against Columbus or against Atlanta. And at that point, it's just, can they get a result against Cincinnati to not finish last in the group? I agree with you. There will not be an at-large team out of Group E. Let's finish the final group, Dan, and that is Group F. It will be LAFC, who officially, as of today, are without Carlos Vela. LA Galaxy, who are without Alexander Katai, who's off to... he's going right on the map, as in back to Europe, and also in the sense that he's going far right, Dan. And then they'll also be without Jonathan Dos Santos, who underwent hernia surgery late last week. And then it's the Houston Dynamo and Portland Timbers. So I guess the premier question is here for me, Dan, with the two players who are the straws that stir the drink for the LA teams gone. Is this not set up for a Giovanni Savarese, a bunker counter, smash and grab, Diego Valeri, LeBron us to the knockout rounds?
Yeah. This is going to be a fun group. I'm looking forward to every single group, every single game of this one. Houston's going to be the team, though, that everybody gets to beat up on. So I think Portland will score a lot of goals. LA is going to score, and both LAs. All of Los Angeles is going to score a lot of goals on Houston. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if you're looking at all this, I wouldn't be surprised if all three of the Galaxy, LAFC, and Portland made it out of this group. However, LAFC are going to have a much better plan than get it to Carlos Vela and get it there, since Carlos Vela will not be here. But when your secondary plan is get it to Diego Rossi, the better Rossi, the way better Rossi, get it to Diego Rossi, have him do some dope stuff and score goals, that's also a really, really good plan. I like LAFC to maybe take first in this group still. Galaxy will be without Jonah Dos Santos, but they'll be keeping most of their better players. And I think they're just a good enough team that'll be able to get the job done against Portland and Houston as well. So Portland are in this one due to their ability to maybe get a draw off of one of the LAs and beat up on Houston. And they'll be a wild card team for that. Just looking at some of the Eastern Conference groups, it's just this like this muddle of talent. And every like there's in each of the Eastern Conference groups, it's either really top heavy and really bottom heavy, which doesn't bode well for a lot of teams getting out of that group. Or it's like Group C, where it's like everybody pounding their head into a cement wall outside of Toronto FC, which is going to lead to low goal differentials, low goals for, goals against numbers, all those kind of stuff. And that is going to benefit teams where there is a groups where there is a like lone team that you can just beat up on. And Houston's going to be that team for Group F, in my opinion.
I like LAFC to win this group. Part of it, again, is me going back to the schedule, Dan. On the first match day we have for Group F, it's the LA Galaxy taking on the Portland Timbers and LAFC taking on the Houston Dynamo. So, okay, it's been suspicious in the greater MLS ether for a couple of weeks now, if not over a month, that Carlos Vela was not going to be at this tournament because of his pregnant wife. If that's the case, then Bob Bradley had to have known and have a contingency plan, because that is how obsessive, compulsive, detailed, and prepared for everything that he is. So they've been training for as long as they can about what happens if Carlos isn't with us. So in that, I think they'll have a plan. And they'll get to test their plan, you know, their rough draft, their dress rehearsal, if you will, for El Tráfico and the Portland Timbers will be the easiest team in this group. So I think they'll get an emphatic win against Houston Dynamo. If we look back at the World Cup, you win your first group stage game, you're generally in a good position to advance. So I think that will give them the confidence to go on, get results against the other two teams and win this group outright. I have the Portland Timbers finishing second in this group, Dan, and I'll tell you why. With Jonathan Dos Santos not there, with the loss of Alexander Gatai and probably Sebastian Legette playing in the right wing position, there's going to be some weak link in there. Probably going to be Perry Kitchen in terms of what's going on with the LA Galaxy midfield. The LA Galaxy have, in terms of weak teams that you have there, the Houston Dynamo have kind of been their bogey team, Jan. This is the curse of AJ De La Garza. Last 2 years, you had the Galaxy play the Houston Dynamo on the final day. Last year, it was at Houston in the final game for DeMarcus Beasley. The year before, the first year was Latan. It was at the Home Depot Center. I might have been the diggity at that point. In any case, they lose the game at home in 2018 to ultimately miss the playoffs when all they needed was a draw. They were up 2-0. They gave up a PK and then ended up losing 3-2. And then I think they ended up getting a draw or they lost. And that decision day last year was all about if they get a result, then they're hosting Minnesota. If they don't, then they're going at Minnesota. It didn't really matter because they beat Minnesota and then lost to LAFC, but maybe that took a little bit out of them because they had to travel midweek. Who knows? It's all a hypothetical. But in any case, and then if you remember, Dan, in the before times, the LA Galaxy played their first game of the season at Houston Dynamo, and it was 1-1. And do you remember how the first and only goal was scored for the LA Galaxy, Dan?
Wasn't it Christian Pavone ripping one in the top corner?
Yes, and it was set Houston. Up. Yes, it was against Houston, and it was David Bingham punting it and the midfield players missing it and it rolling perfectly onto Pavone in stride. So David Bingham, Dan, is currently the assist leader for the LA Galaxy with 1. Everybody else tied with 0 because that's the only goal the LA Galaxy have scored. So Houston is a bit of a bogey team. If there's any team that's going to slip up against Houston or at the very least not win that game by multiple goals, it's probably going to be the LA Galaxy. So I could imagine it being, I could see it being the Galaxy beating Houston 1-0 where Portland and LAFC both get a result. Say the LA Galaxy tie Portland and then tie LAFC. LAFC, you know, probably get 7 points. Houston Dynamo ends up losing because they lose all three of their games. And the Portland Timbers either go in on goal differential or maybe on points if the Galaxy end up drawing against the Houston Dynamo. So for those reasons, I have concerns about the Galaxy, just on top of the fact that Chicharito Hernandez did not look good in the first two games, and the offensive plan was lumping balls to him when that's not the type of – that's the type of number nine Zlatan is. That's not the type of number nine that Chicharito Hernandez is. So that's a concern for me on the Galaxy, just because similar to RSL, where their entire offense is get the ball to Rusnak in the final third, either have him find somebody and create a shot. If any team is able to disrupt the Pavone to Chicharito connection, I have serious questions about where the goals are coming from for the LA Galaxy. With that, Dan, let's just really quickly go through who are your three at-large bids, your three best third teams or best fourth team in the case of Group A?
My three best third teams. So I had the Rapids as a wild card, Timbers as a wild card, and I had the Chicago Fire as a wild card. And you can throw in the Union or Orlando, either one kind of count as that third in the group. Third place in Group A. But my three wild cards would be Timbers, Rapids, and the Fire.
So we're both in agreement in that our three, our best at large teams coming out of this tournament are in Group A, D, and F respectively. I think I already mentioned I had Miami coming out of Group A. I had the LA Galaxy as the best third in Group F, and then I had Minnesota in Group D. But I'll go ahead and guarantee it, Dan. I think one of the at-large bids will come out of Group D, no matter which team that it is. Yep. All right, Dan, let's get on to the roundtable stuff. I will throw it to you first. We officially have a player for Austin FC. Who is it, and what do we know about him?
Not a lot, but his name is Rodney Redis. I was saying his name a little funny earlier, but we'll be nice now that Anthony Precourt follows us on Twitter. This guy's a Paraguayan international, plays for Club Guarani, which I believe is one of the better clubs in Paraguay. He's a striker, winger, goal scorer, kind of. He's got a lot of appearances for Guarani, but he doesn't have a whole lot of goals in. He's got 9 goals across like 70-something appearances for them. But in Copa Libertadores, which is the highest level of competition in South America, he's got 3 goals in 9 games, which is a much better rate than that, 9 goals in 72 games. However, the pace is there, the finishing ability is definitely there, and you look on video, I think it'll be a good move. He's a $2 million budget deal. That's kind of about what it was. He's not a DP, not a might be TAM, but still, I believe he's young enough to fit into that young TAM or young DP. I don't know if that stuff still exists, but even if any of his stuff did turn him into a DP, he'd be a young DP and he'd be able to count low against the cap for them. But a good first move, and we'll see what else they continue to build around them. But I like the move for them. If that is their first move, I am curious to see this whole sign of things to come with them. The other quick news that I'll throw in there before I throw it to Matt, to give us one of the lone best players in the world, the best player in the world, maybe might be coming to MLS. Anyways, João Plata is back, but he's not in MLS. He will be playing for Club Toluca. Just signed for Toluca in Liga MX. So that's another RSL player that he really hasn't played in like 2 years, but interesting MLS.
All right, so Dan, @DeportesWRadio or W Deportes on Twitter is reporting that Messi might be interested in joining the LA Galaxy. This isn't super hot news from an LA Galaxy perspective, Dan. We know that GBS is good friends with Lionel Messi's dad, I believe. I don't know if they played together. They had some other connection during their respective playing careers to where they were familiar with each other. And so Guillermo has known Messi since he was a young kid. I think even prior to him joining, is it Old Boys that he was with on the academy team, Dan? Do I have that remembering correctly?
I
think it was Newell's Old Boys.
It was Rosario Central.
Rosario Central. Yes, my knowledge of Argentine teams that are not River Plate and Boca Juniors is certainly lacking. So I knew it was not one of those two. So okay. This isn't new from the standpoint of somebody reporting on that. So this is kind of similar to somebody saying every 6 months for 3 years up until it actually happened that the LA Galaxy were courting Zlatan and that was actually going to happen. It happened while I was at PhD. It happened when he left PSG for Manchester United, and pretty much happened every 6 months while he was at Manchester United. So this isn't new in that regard. The knowledge of the connection between the LA Galaxy front office and head coach and the connection to Lionel Messi and his family members is not new information. I guess it's news in the sense that it is somebody. Where is W Deportes based, Dan? Let's find out. So they have Televisa Radio. So I'm not sure if this is an Argentine based outlet or if it is a Spanish, as in España, based outlet. But in any case, this is the first real rumor that we've seen in Spanish language with an outlet that's not based somewhere in the U.S., specifically in and around Southern California. So that's a little bit new in that regard. And we've gotten enough information with how things have been going at Barcelona this past year, with the fact that they're going to have election and a new board and the manager might be out, and they're probably going to squander, you know, their one chance to win a major trophy again, and the fact that, you know, it looks like they're set up to bottle the league, and barring them getting a win at the new camp against Real Madrid, Real Madrid's going to win the league. So that's problematic. And if you just look at the way Barcelona plays, like, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, this is kind of like LeBron the last couple years that he was in Cleveland the second time, where he has Suarez is his Kyrie Irving, and then I guess Antoine Griezmann is like the talented player who's been a disappointment, so maybe that's Kevin Love, and then everybody else are just a bunch of Joe Schmoes at this point. You know, Messi is having to, if they're going to win La Liga, if they're going to win Champions League, Messi is going to have to LeBron them to that. He's been open in terms of his public criticism at times of the club, and I'm not sure how, given what's going on with the pandemic and where they are from a financing standpoint in terms of debt, whether or not something that's actually going to be okay. And so, you know, the fact that they're in dire straits financially, I question, you know, they need to bring in 2 to 3 world-class-ish players in order for them to sort of revamp going into next year. I think it's pretty clear with the pandemic and where they are from a money standpoint that they're not getting Neymar back from PSG, even though that already fell through when, you know, prior to the pandemic and the before times. So I don't see how things get immediately better at Barcelona. I could certainly see, like, let's go through a year, let's figure some stuff out. As long as we finish in the top four and make Champions League, fine. Let's try and win the Copa del Rey, because, you know, it's only 5 or 6 games or what have you. And then, you know, we'll try to get to the knockout stage in Champions League, knowing that we're probably not going to win Champions League, and that's fine. But Messi's not getting any younger. I believe his contract is up at the end of next year. So I don't know that this is happening right now, just because with where Barcelona is financially, I don't see how they, you know, really from a financial standpoint, if they're parting ways with Messi, they're getting a king's ransom. I don't think even as much money as the Galaxy spend by MLS standards are prepared to pay what Barcelona would value and demand for Messi. But certainly next year, out of contract on a free transfer, I could definitely see it happening. I think the other thing that he's probably competing with, I don't think he goes anywhere else in Europe. I think he's so happy at Barcelona, he doesn't want to tatter that. If it's anything, he goes back to Argentina and resurrects Central, his youth club, just at the very end of his career, just to, you know, do right by them, given how he left with the club and didn't actually turn professional with them. But I think that's still the most likely answer. But I mean, you know, if the LA Galaxy are doing it, they're pretty used to these long courtships. They did it with Zlatan. They've done it with other players. I could see them doing it with the LA Galaxy. I don't think it happens anytime during this calendar year. Dan, let's get out of here. Tell people about one of our sponsors, and do you have any last words?
Quickly, W Deportes is a radio station from Mexico, owned by Televisa, which is one of the larger media, or part by Televisa. It's a Mexico City radio station. However, their parent company, Prisa, PRISA, is based in Madrid, Spain. Ooh. So they probably have their own links. They have a number of newspapers. Diario AS, which is one of the largest sports newspapers in Spain. Cinco Días and El País are a couple of massive newspapers that they have. a few magazines and a few television stations that they have. But they are a significant media conglomerate in Spain, based in Madrid. So there might be some legitimate connections that are making its way through all of that fun stuff. But anyways, I guess last words. First off, you can find me on Twitter at SparrowDanline4. Last words. A couple weeks ago, when we were making our return to Bundesliga action predictions, I said Josh Sargent would score an incredibly important goal, helping Werder Bremen stave off relegation. At that time, they were headed for relegation, and it seemed pretty doomed that Josh Sargent was either going to have to find a loan to stay in top Bundesliga or take some time to develop in the second Bundesliga as their obvious number one striker option. Guess what? I was correct. Almost literally correct. They won on the final day of regular season play for the Bundesliga, 6-1. Josh Sargent scored the sixth goal, and then he happened to create one of the own goals that was the key in the second leg of their playoff matchup versus Heidenheim. Second leg happened today. Werder Bremen stay up with Josh Sargent, the fighting Josh Sargents, and Milo Rashikas stay up. So I'm really excited for that. So I was correct a few weeks ago. Any plaudits can be given to me on Twitter at SparrowDanline94. Are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. With the motto, any design you want, seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com.
Just one thing that I also want to add, Dan, that final regular season game for Werder Bremen was critical in terms of the scoreline because they actually jumped Fortuna Dusseldorf, who ended up finishing second, were in one of the automatic relegation bids. They actually jumped them on goal differential. So not only did they need to win that, they needed to win that one big. So, I mean, you're talking about staying up by the skin of your teeth, barely, like,
they won
it was 6-1, barely on both.
And then Dusseldorf lost like 2-0 or something like that.
Yeah, so it was two by the skin of their teeth, and every single one of those goal contributions, including creating the own goal from Josh Sargent, were critical in Werder Bremen actually staying up. Yeah. No last words for me, folks. We've seen, I guess the one thing that I will add, Dan, is I'm able to confirm now that Jonathan Lewis is one of the players for the Colorado Rapids who tested positive in the week of June 24th. So he's one of the players who did not travel to Orlando. Strongly suspicious based on some of the B-roll footage that the Rapids have put out, that Keegan Rosenberry is the other first team player. Not sure about the two guys who tested positive when they were set to get on the charter flight yesterday, Sunday at time of recording. But so in any case, probably going to be the Jeremy Kelly show at right back, in that case for the Colorado Rapids, and they've got a plethora of other options at wing roll. It just won't be Jonathan Lewis coming off the bench against Real Salt Lake. Follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Follow us across all social media platforms at LastWordSC and LastWordOnSoccer.com. Subscribe, rate, and share us wherever you get your podcast. Just search LWS Radio or Last Word on Sports. You'll find us at a bunch of other great stuff. Listeners, we're going to try and podcast during this tournament. We're not sure how it's going to work given the three hosts or the three editors at LastWordOnSoccer.com, and there's no real way for us to record that's not on a weekend, not during work, and not during when an actual game is being played, since it's, you know, 8 p.m. and then 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But we'll come to you at some point, and it'll be about games, and we're not sure when, but it'll absolutely be chaotic. And even if this tournament gets canceled, we'll have a postmortem and talk about it. Listeners, we'll see you then, whenever that is.